special lager style episode of
Brutal Battle.
Yes, as per usual, it's Carlin and it's Rebecca doing the style thing. It is that time because if anyone remembers, we had a decasode not long ago and it was a Brutal Battle Royale of lagers. Although I will do a little spoiler. I'm not going to reveal what four beers we're trying, but I will say we had a lot of hoppy lagers in that tournament, so there is no hoppy lager for us to taste today. But we do have four beers of differing lager styles, so we will get into that. Also, I will let you know ahead of time that I'm going to use the BJCP guidelines to give you information on the different styles, which BJCP, for anyone who doesn't know, is Beer Judge Certification Program. And that's what's used to give people, you know, like Cicerone status, and it's used for, as it says in it, beer judging. So I figure that's the proper way to go. So first off, Rebecca, what do you know about lagers? I mean, what's your conception of lagers?
Well, is this before or after you did the Brutal Battle Royale?
Right, I mean right now.
Okay, well now I don't really know what my perception is, because before I thought, oh, they're definitely just like lighter styles, mm-hmm. kind of like not maybe a lot of flavor, but now I know that the lager style is much more broad,
yes,
broader than that, so I really don't know.
It's very broad, and a lot of people didn't know, including myself, until I was really doing a lot of research for that Brutal Battle Royale for lagers, that some of these things that are lagers were actually in that category. Like Doppelbox, I didn't know ahead of time that it was Doppelbox. And perfect example of how this show's, you know, learning with me. Although some people may have already known that, obviously, so, you know. But it's interesting to really look through and see the entire list of what a lager is, because I'm sure a lot of people out there would have no clue that certain things were lagers.
Yeah.
Like, I've said a few at my job where I'll say, you know, I'm going to do lagers, and people are like, oh, well, you know, that's the, you know, not all that great. And I'm like, yeah, but it includes this, 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 this. And they're like, oh, those are lagers?
Yeah.
So I think not a lot of people know. But to do some of the basics, there are ales and there are lagers, and lagers are the ones that are matured in a colder temperature than the ales are. Actually, to be specific about it, ales are usually fermented between, you know, room temperature and 75 degrees Fahrenheit. That's their range. And lagers are actually between 46 and 59 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm. So that's a huge difference in temperature right there. So that's a fundamental difference between those. But then there's also bottom fermenting yeast versus top fermenting yeast, which really, as far as I know, doesn't mean a ton except how the yeast acts. You know, does it ferment on the top or does it ferment from the bottom? So... But anyway, so we do have four lagers. I'm going to do a little bit on a few of these specific styles within lagers, and then we'll get into the beers. I know, it's disappointing. Rebecca's already reaching for the...
I just picked up the bottle opener.
She was already reaching for the opener. But you'll see as I go through that we're going to cover a lot of styles, because there are a lot of styles, actually. So here we go. The first one we have is a light American lager. It's a lower gravity and lower calorie beer than those standard international lagers. Strong flavors are a fault, designed to appeal to the broadest range of the general public as possible.
Hmm.
So, you know,
that's what I feel like most people think of.
Yeah,
and
that's your
lager,
American light,
yeah.
light lager. That is typically what people think of as far as lagers, because that's been our history with beer, has been a light lager. Then there's a standard American lager, which...
Wait, what was the first one?
American light. Light American lager.
Okay, this one's just the regular
right.
Okay.
So this is a standard American lager. And that is strong flavors... are a fault as well. It's an international style, including the standard mass market lager from most countries. So just so you know that. The premium American lager is another one. Premium beers tend to have fewer adjuncts than standard and light lagers and can be all malt. Strong flavors are a fault in this one, but premium lagers have more flavor than standard and light lagers. A broad category of international mass market lagers ranging from upscale American lagers to the typical import or, quote, green bottle international beers found in America.
Okay.
So we're starting to go up in flavor, basically, mm-hmm. as we're doing this. Then the next one is the Munich Hells, or Helles. And we actually have one of those, but let me go ahead and talk about this first. There's a history, well, I'll tell you what it is, and there's a little bit of a history on it. Unlike Pilsner, but like its cousin Munich Dunkel, Helles is a malt-accentuated beer that is not overly sweet, but rather focuses on malt flavor with underlying hop bitterness in a supporting role. The history of this, it was created in Munich in 1895 at the Spaten Brewery by Gabriel Settelmeyer to compete with Pilsner-style beers.
Hmm.
So if you would like to, you can go ahead and start opening our Helles Lager and pouring it, and then we'll talk about it. But I'm going to do one more style real quick, which is the Dortmunder Export.
What? Never even heard of that.
Oh, you've never heard of a Dortmunder before?
No.
I had a Dortmunder in college before. I think that's my only run-in with it, and I don't even...
Is that surprising? Have most people had a Dortmunder?
Well, you know, I don't know. Most people have not heard of a Dortmunder.
Okay, why did you... You made me feel real weird.
Well, I don't think there are a whole lot of Dortmunders that are done in craft beer, or if there are, they don't call them specifically Dortmunders. Although I do know that Great Lakes Brewing out of, I believe, Cleveland, Ohio, they do a Dortmunder Gold, which I have had and I did enjoy. So Dortmunder Exports brewed to a slightly higher starting gravity than other light lagers, providing a firm malty body and underlying maltiness to complement the sulfate-accentuated hop bitterness. The term export is a beer strength category under German beer tax law, and is not strictly synonymous with the Dortmunder style. Beer from other cities or regions can be brewed to export strength and labeled as such. And a bit of history on this, it's a style indigenous to the Dortmund industrial region in Dortmunder. Dortmunder has been on the decline in Germany in recent years, apparently. So, not all that popular anymore. But what beer, what Helles style lager do we have, Rebecca?
It is the Helles Lager from Victory Brewing. Mm-hmm. It is 4.8%. And
Victory's out of, are they Downingtown,
Pennsylvania? Downingtown, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Downingtown, Pennsylvania. Gotcha. So one thing that I want to point out about this, you know, you hear Helles Lager, and a lot of people probably don't know what Helles means. A lot of people probably don't know what Dunkel means because there are Dunkel Lagers as well. Well, these are Bavarian terms. Germany, obviously, and Helles means pale, and Dunkel means dark.
Oh, okay.
So basically, it's a pale lager or it's a dark lager. Oh, okay. So is it a Helles lager? Is it a pale lager? Or is it a Dunkel lager? Is it a dark lager? So
okay.
Now you know, and knowing's half the battle, like G.I. Joe used to say.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
So the color, it's pretty apple juice ish. In the coloration, yeah. A little bit of a straw, like between apple juice and straw.
I was going to say straw, and then my next descriptor would be dark urine.
Well, yeah. But there's always that with lagers, pretty much.
Yeah.
The pale lagers.
No head.
No head at all. I can't really see. I can see a few tiny bubbles just floating at the top, but
not much.
No active carbonation going on. And it's super clear. You can see right through this sucker. Smell it. It smells very lagery.
Right, yeah.
It does have a little bit of a...
It's like real clean smelling. Yeah, like super crisp.
Crisp, clean. There's a slight, like, earthy, herbal aspect to it. Hay, like light hay to it.
That's kind of all I'm getting.
A little bit of, like, a corn type note. I mean, it just smells like a basic lager. I mean, what you would think of as a basic lager.
Since you said corn, I feel like that's all I'm tasting in this.
There is a corny aspect to it, but I'd say I get a lot more of a straw.
A corny aspect?
Yeah. I would say I get a lot more of a straw note over top of that corn type aspect.
Tastes like the farm.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like,
I don't know last time you licked farms, but, you know, yeah. You just go there and, like, lick the barn, lick the side of a horse, lick the pig trough.
Just like when I was in kindergarten and I went on that field trip and the cow licked me.
A cow did lick you.
And I tell Carlin this story every time.
All the freaking time. Like, I've never heard it before. It's the cow story over and over and over again.
Every time we drive by where the field trip was. You know, I kind of like this.
This is an easy drinking beer. If you're looking for something that tastes like beer, it's not crazy overwhelming with flavor, but the flavor is pretty nice and bright and clean.
It would be a good gateway beer for someone who says they don't like beer.
Well, or someone who's used to drinking the macro beers, the macro lagers, and is looking to, you know, transition over to craft beer. This is something that would have a little bit of a taste of familiarity to it, but the flavor is bumped up a bunch.
And what's a typical ABV on a macro? I don't even know.
Like 5.6.
Okay, so the ABV would be comparable.
Yeah, because what was this? This was
4.8.
Yeah, 4.8, so even lower. Almost a full percentage point lower. But yeah, this goes down so smooth, you can't perceive,
I already drank mine.
Yeah, I know, you can't perceive any alcohol, it doesn't fight you at all, it's just... It's easy. You know, this is one you could drink when it's hot out. No problem.
Yeah. I could probably...
Victory?
Drink a six-pack, no problem.
Victory successful in creating a lager right there? No problems.
Do we have to listen to more?
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna talk some more about some types of beers here. I'm going to do three more, and then we can do our next one.
Okay, thank you.
So here we have a German Pilsner, which a lot of people will just call a Pils.
Okay.
It's drier and crisper than a Bohemian Pilsner.
Okay, that was my next question. Are there different types of Pilsners?
With a bitterness that tends to linger more in the aftertaste due to higher attenuation and higher sulfate water. Lighter in body and color, and with higher carbonation than a Bohemian Pilsner. Modern examples of German Pilsners tend to become paler in color, drier in finish, and more bitter as you move from south to north in Germany. Isn't that interesting? I didn't know that. So the
region
profile changes with the region, kind of like with wine. There's a lot of that with wine and, you know, identifying the regions. It was a copy of Bohemian Pilsner adapted to brewing conditions in Germany. So basically, German brewers saw the Bohemian Pilsner style.
They wanted
style
to do the same, but...
But they had to adapt it to what they have and how they want to brew.
This might be a dumb question. Is there an American Pilsner?
Yes.
Oh.
There is.
Okay.
There's Bohemian and there's American are the other two. So there you go. Next one is the Bohemian Pilsner. Uses Moravian malted barley and a decoction mash for rich malt character. Saaz hops and low sulfate, low carbonate water provide a distinctively soft, rounded hop profile. Traditional yeast sometimes can provide a background diacetyl note, which diacetyl is kind of like a buttery aspect to it. Dextrins provide additional body, and diacetyl enhances the perception of a fuller palate. Because, you know, butter in your mouth gives you a fuller coating. It was first brewed in 1842, and the style was the original clear, light-colored beer. So, it's when you talk about light beers, Bohemian Pilsners are where it all started. So that's good to know going forward for everyone, including me. Then our last one here is the Classic American Pilsner. The Classic American Pilsner was brewed both pre-Prohibition and post-Prohibition with some differences. The original gravity would have been appropriate for pre-Prohibition. It was higher at that point, and then post-Prohibition, the original gravity was actually much lower. So, corresponding IBUs dropped from a pre-Prohibition level of between 30 to 40 to 25 to 30 after Prohibition. So, the American Pilsners were much hoppier before Prohibition started, and then afterwards they got a lot less. I wonder what the reason was.
I was just going to say, what, why? I wonder why that is.
Well, maybe we'll find out because there's a history portion. A version of Pilsner brewed in the U.S. by immigrant German brewers who brought the process and yeast with them when they settled in America. They worked with the ingredients that were native to America to create a unique version of the original Pilsner. This style died out after Prohibition, but was resurrected as a home-brewed style by advocates of the hobby.
Hmm.
So it's interesting because you see that in Germany, they looked at the Bohemian Pilsner, grabbed that, and made it their own, and then German settlers came to America
and then did
turned
the same.
It in, well, yeah, turned it into an American thing. So it's really interesting. You always learn something. So what do we have right now?
Okay. I got the Brooklyn Pilsner.
This is by Brooklyn Brewing out of Utica, New York, if I'm correct.
Oh, here we are. A little history on the label here. Brewed in the style favored by New York's pre-Prohibition German-American brewers.
Oh, so if it's pre-Prohibition style, it should be on the hoppier side, actually. As opposed to your typical post-Prohibition Pilsner. Mm-hmm. We shall see then.
Yeah.
Does it have IBUs on it by chance? I know some beers do that. I don't think the Victory did. Yeah, Victory didn't.
No, I don't see it.
Okay, that's fine.
But it is 5.1.
All right. I like what Brooklyn does, so I'm excited to try this. Get it in my glass.
When I picked this beer up, I saw the Sriracha Ace next to it, and I was like, oh, man, I love that beer.
Yeah, oh, my gosh. Yeah, and we did it on one of our special saver episodes.
Oh, yeah.
So people go back and listen to that, because that is a hell of a beer, the Sriracha Ace. So the coloration on this is almost like the Helles Lager, but a little more yellow, like light yellow color. Right.
And it's definitely more hazy.
And there's like a decent little bit of a head when you swirl it up.
Yep.
Whereas with the Helles Lager, there was not.
Getting a little banana on the nose.
I could see where you'd get a slight banana on the nose. I get a lot of lemon. I get a lot of like a lemon zest kick in there. Because there's a little bit of the bitterness, like the peel. But there's a citrusy tartness on the nose as well.
I get a little sweetness.
Mm-hmm. Like, little honey, a little bit of honey.
Almost like a banana chip.
Okay, you know? I could definitely go with that.
Yeah, okay.
And a little bit of that hay aspect, and it also smells pretty crisp. But the comparison of the nose on this versus the Helles Lager, it's like a deeper, richer nose. And more hoppy with the, you know, those citrusy, lemony notes.
I tasted it. I get no hoppy profile in the taste at all.
Well, okay. I do in the sense that it's a little more bitter than the Helles Lager is.
Okay, okay.
But not a ton,
no.
To be honest.
Like, the very slightest bitter finish, that's it.
I will say this, there are a lot of Pilsners out there that have kind of a rough finish to them. This doesn't really have much, it's there a little bit, but it's just the slightest fleeting moment on the end.
I would say it fades very quickly. Like, as soon as you notice it, it's gone.
Pretty well-rounded. Are you getting any of that kind of banana or banana chip aspect?
Not at all.
Yeah, I'm not either. I'm getting a lot of straw. I'm getting some honey aspect. I'm getting...
there's a little sweetness.
There's a little bit of that lemon zest aspect as well to it, but it's not... There's not, like, a tartness with it.
Yeah.
But...
I like the Helles Lager better.
Well, you're not supposed to say
sorry.
Yet.
Oh, gosh.
There's definitely, as you keep drinking too, you notice more and more the bitterness is significantly more than the Helles Lager. But, once again, another beer that's pretty easy to put down. This is a quick one. You could just pound through it if you really wanted to.
That's what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Pounding it down.
And this is one of the things, like, I've been finding myself kind of gravitating a little bit more since our Brutal Battle Royale Lager Tournament to some lighter-bodied, lighter, in general, beers. Like, every now and then I'm just like, hey, you know, I think I kind of want, like, a hoppy Pilsner. Because I still like my hops, but it's just, like, a touch of hops in that instance. So I want, like, a hoppy Pilsner, you know, something like that. Just light Saison, like a Belgian style. wheat, whatever, you know? It's interesting because I hear a lot of people talk about how when you get real deep into craft beer, how you'll start to get real serious. Like, you start on the lighter side, like, with brown ales and with pale ales and stuff, and then you're into, like, stouts and barrel-aged stuff and sours and IPAs, and then after you've done that for a little bit, you start coming back around to the lighter stuff, and you're kind of like, ah, saisons, pilsners, mm-hmm. wheat beers, let's get back into that. So I feel like I'm doing a little bit of that, not a ton, because I still like some barrel-aged stuff, sours, IPAs, but I'm starting to dip my toes a little more into the light stuff. And a lot, it really happened because of the tournament. Mm, so
yeah,
it's very important to note that just trying things is what you should really be doing. And it's important because you never know what's really going to start, you know, catching your fancy, in a sense. Well,
just like we learned from our niece, who learned from Daniel Tiger, you don't know unless you try it.
Leave it to you, Rebecca, to bring a child's TV show reference into a beer podcast.
I don't even know. Is it a cartoon,
it's
a right?
Yes, it's
Daniel
a kid's
Tiger,
show.
Right? Okay.
From what I haven't watched it, but from what I understand, it's a kid's show.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, I've got for you two more beer styles that are
and
lagers,
then we get to drink the next one.
And then we'll get to drink the next one.
Oh my gosh.
So I shortened it a little.
Okay.
Okay, so let's get into this. The next is a Vienna lager.
Okay.
I'm sure you've heard that before. I know a very popular one is by Devil's Backbone out of Virginia.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yes, okay. It's actually mm-hmm. called Vienna lager.
Yes, so. It is.
American versions can be a bit stronger of this style, drier and more bitter, while European versions tend to be sweeter. Many Mexican amber and dark lagers used to be more authentic, but unfortunately are now more like sweet, adjunct-laden American dark lagers. The original amber lager developed by Anton Dreher shortly after the isolation of lager yeast, nearly extinct in its area of origin, the style continues in Mexico, where it was brought by Santiago Graf and other Austrian immigrant brewers in the late 1800s. Regrettably, most modern examples use adjuncts, which lessen the rich malt complexity characteristic of the best examples of this style. The style owes much of its character to the method of malting, which is Vienna malt. Lighter malt character overall than Oktoberfest, yet still decidedly balanced toward malt.
Hmm.
So then what would follow is the next style is Oktoberfest, or also known as a Märzen.
Märzen?
Märzen is how it's said in German.
Oh.
Ja, der Märzen. Domestic German versions tend to be golden, like a strong Pils-dominated Helles. Export German versions are typically orange amber in color and have a distinctive toasty malt character. Fest-type beers are special occasion beers that are usually stronger than their everyday counterparts. Origin is credited to Gabriel Settlmeyer, based on an adaptation of the Vienna style developed by Anton Dreher around 1840, shortly after lager yeast was first isolated. Typically brewed in the spring, signaling the end of the traditional brewing season, and stored in cold caves or cellars during the warm summer months. Served in autumn amidst traditional celebrations.
Hmm.
So Oktoberfest.
Fest.
It's a party. It's a festival. It's a good time.
Hmm.
So, what's our next beer then?
It's time.
It is time.
It's the Oktoberfest
Märzen
Lager by Left Hand.
And Left Hand is out of somewhere in Colorado, Longmont. Longmont, Colorado?
Longmont.
I've got it. All right. Here we go.
And
ABV.
I'm looking for it. It tells you to enjoy it between 40 to 50 degrees in a liter mass or pub glass.
Okay, well, we're doing neither of those.
And
sorry, Left Hand. We don't follow rules.
ABV, I can't locate you.
Really? It might not have it. Not everyone throws their ABV on there. But
I don't see it.
Nope. There is no ABV.
Surprise.
Okay, that's fine. But I will say there is some information on here. They have the ingredients. They say Rocky Mountain water, malted barley, hops, and yeast. real specific.
Yeah. What?
Although, actually, I did find the ABV. It's kind of hidden. 6.6%.
Sneaky. Rocky Mountain. That Rocky Mountain water, I think, is probably what...
What makes it.
Yeah. I'm glad they added that on there.
Yeah, well, that actually might be a little bit of a jab at Coors.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they talk about Rocky Mountain water all the time.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Like, it's cold from the Rockies.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So, it may be a little bit of a jab at them. I don't know. Maybe not. Who knows?
That's funny.
I need a...
Ooh. Oh, my gosh!
I just got water all over the place. I was trying to rinse, but...
That was worse than mine. You have it all over the table.
I do. Okay. Well, why don't you just go ahead and pour... Pour mine while I get something to mop up with.
Okay. Well, I'm pouring. And I will say this one is definitely the darkest.
I swear I'm not drunk or even buzzed because these are very, very low ABV beers. It's just my coordination is totally off today.
Okay. So it's dark. I get a little orange... Little reddish, almost like a ruby red.
Yeah, there is a ruby hue to this beer. A little bit of a brownish aspect, but it's really clear.
Yeah, it is very
clear. It's pretty. It's really pretty.
Because I got more of like the orangish, but then you hold it up to the light and you get that dark ruby.
Smells very...
Just like our table runner that you got all wet right now.
Yeah, almost the same color. That's right. What do you smell on that? Very malty, obviously.
Yeah, that's all I get. I love that deep, rich, malty. Yeah. Mm.
There's like a dark honey note in the nose. There's a little bit of a fruitiness, kind of like cherries. There's a little bit of a cherry note in the nose to me.
I just went to drinking.
Well, go back to smell it. There's a little bit of a cherry aspect, but it's a little syrupy too. Not in a bad way, but a little bit of like a cough medicine cherry to it.
Kind
of
like the cherries you would get on like a... What's that cake? Black Forest.
Which I think is like a German style cake, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, kind of like that syrupy, like sugary...
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because there is like a very syrupy, sugary aspect in the nose with that cherry note and... There's a little bit of a brown sugar in the nose as well. It smells sweet. It just smells sweet, sweet, sweet. And I'll taste it. But you already tasted it, so what do you think?
I really like it, actually. And I'm not... I don't normally gravitate towards this style of beer.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it. I'm really digging the malty qualities. I love cherries. So anything that reminds me of a cherry, I really like.
And there is a little bit of that cherry flavor in there. It's not huge, but it's there on the finish.
I think I more or less just get like a dried fruit. Like, I don't know if it's necessarily a cherry or a raisin or, but just that dried fruit with a little sweetness.
It's ringing a little cherry for me, but the sweetness, it's not too much, but it kind of gives you a little bit of that sweet tingle on the edges of your tongue that you get and be like, oh, you know, this is kind of sweet. So,
I like it.
Yeah, so that's not a bad beer. And it's funny because I was telling people recently when I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to do a lager style episode. And I was saying, you know, that one we were trying was an Oktoberfest, a.k.a. Märzen. And I was like, you know, I used to really be feeling Oktoberfest beers, but I really haven't for the past bunch of years. But... This isn't bad. I feel like I could drink this thing.
Was it Flying Dogs Oktoberfest that we really liked?
Do they do an Oktoberfest?
Maybe.
Dogtoberfest. That's what it's called. Yes, so they do one.
Is that okay?
You may be right on that.
There was I remember we had it at that at the tasting at Wine World that one time. And there, I think he was trying to tell me that there was something different about it, but I remember I liked that one too.
Well, duly noted.
Okay, now how many more do we have?
A bunch.
Oh no.
Well, more than two, but not like a ton. There's a few.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll finish it out, and then we'll get to our last beer.
I'm just going
to
keep sipping on this.
Yeah, no, you go ahead, by all means. So the next is Dark American Lager. which you could say is a American dunkel, if you will.
Oh, American dunkel. Okay, got it.
A broad range of international lagers that are darker than pale and not assertively bitter and or roasted. That is it. That's all it says. So it's just darker. It's the color.
Okay.
I mean, that's what qualifies. Next is a Munich dunkel. Unfiltered versions from Germany can taste like liquid bread with a yeasty, earthy richness not found in exported filtered dunkels. The classic brown lager style of Munich, which developed as a darker, malt-accentuated beer, in part because of the moderately carbonate water. While originating in Munich, the style has become very popular throughout Bavaria. Bavaria. Jesus
Christ. You are acting like you're drunk.
I'm not. I don't know what it is. It's one of those days, you know. Schwarz beer, also just known as a black beer. In comparison with a Munich Dunkel, usually darker in color, drier on the palate, and with a noticeable but not high roasted malt edge to balance the malt base. While sometimes called a black pils, the beer is rarely that dark. Don't expect strongly roasted porter-like flavors. A regional specialty from southern Thuringia and northern Franconia in Germany, and probably a variant of the Munich Dunkel style. So there you have that one. And then we're moving to our last section. As our cat scratches her scratching board.
That's what she's supposed to do.
Which we do encourage that. Thank you very much, Chloe. You just have a tendency to do this when we're recording. And we'll usually cut it out. But I might just leave it in this time. So we'll see. All right, so now we're going to move to the final portion, which are box styles. And there are a few box styles, okay?
Okay, let me know when it's time.
Yeah, there are four.
Four box?
I'm sorry. You're going to have to wait for it. So people can probably guess what our last style is, as a form of, huh?
Bock.
There you go, as a form of Bock. First we have is a My Bock or Helles Bock. Yeah. Can be thought of as either a pale version of a traditional Bock or a Munich Helles brewed to Bock strength. While quite malty, this beer typically has less dark and rich malt flavors than a traditional Bock. May also be drier, hoppier, and more bitter than a traditional Bock. The hops compensate for the lower level of melanoidins. There is some dispute whether Helles Bock and My Bock are synonymous, which My, by the way, means May. Like the month of May.
Oh.
Most agree that they are identical, as is the consensus for Märzen and Oktoberfest, but some believe that Maibock is a fest-style beer hitting the upper limits of hopping and color for the range. Any fruitiness is due to Munich and other specialty malts, not yeast-derived esters developed during fermentation. A fairly recent development in comparison to the other members of the Bock family. The serving of Maibock is specifically associated with springtime and the month of May. So there you go. Maybach, basically. I wonder if people drink it and play with the maypole. If anybody knows what a maypole is. Those things are stupid, by the way. Maypoles, really dumb. That's because that's back when people didn't have, like, any real form of entertainment, so they just had, like, ribbons on a pole, and they just ran around.
Huh.
Just terrible. It's just like playing old hoop and stick. Rolling a hoop down a hill, putting a stick in it.
Well, you know, now people think all you do to entertain yourself is look at a little box.
That's true.
Known as your phone.
I wonder what people in the distant future are going to say about our time now when it comes to entertainment.
Yeah.
Like, that's stupid. All right. The next is a traditional Bock. Decoction, mashing, and long boiling plays an important part of flavor development as it enhances the caramel and melanoidin flavor aspects of the malt. Any fruitiness is due to Munich and other specialty malts, not yeast-derived esters developed during fermentation. Originated in the northern German city of Einbeck, which was a brewing center and popular exporter in the days of the Hanseatic League, 14th to 17th century was that time period, recreated in Munich starting in the 17th century. The name Bock is based on a corruption of the name Einbeck in the Bavarian dialect and was thus only used after the beer came to Munich. Bock also means billy goat in German.
And what?
And is often used in logos and advertisements.
Billy goat?
Which is funny because if you think about Eyinger's Celebrator Doppelbock, there's a goat on the label, which the Celebrator was good. That's a good Bock. Doppelbock. Which the next style is Doppelbock. most versions are dark colored and may display the caramelizing and melanoidin effect of decocted mashing, but excellent pale versions also exist. The pale versions will not have the same richness and darker malt flavors of the dark versions and may be a bit drier, hoppier, and more bitter. While most traditional examples are in the ranges cited, the style can be considered to have no upper limit for gravity, alcohol, and bitterness, thus providing a home for very strong lagers. Any fruitiness is due to Munich and other specialty malts and not yeast-derived esters developed during fermentation. A Bavarian specialty, first brewed in Munich by the monks of St. Francis of Paula. Historical versions were less well attenuated than modern interpretations, with consequentially higher sweetness and lower alcohol levels, and hence was considered liquid bread by the monks. The term Doppel, which means double Bock, was coined by Munich consumers. Many Doppelbocks have names ending in Ader, either as a tribute to the prototypical Salvator, I guess, or to take advantage of the beer's popularity. And then we have our last one, which is the Eisbock. Some people say Eisbock, whatever. Eisbocks are not simply stronger Doppelbocks. The name refers to the process of freezing and concentrating the beer. Hmm. Some Doppelbocks are stronger than Eisbocks, though. Extended lagering is often needed post-freezing to smooth the alcohol and enhance the malt and alcohol balance. Any fruitiness is due to Munich and other specialty malts, not yeast-derived esters developed during fermentation. A traditional Kulmbock specialty brewed by freezing a Doppelbock and removing the ice to concentrate the flavor and alcohol content, as well as any defects. So this basically, you know, when you say Eisbock, it basically is a situation where when people are saying Eisbock, it is kind of like an Eisbock because they're freezing.
It's cold, yeah.
Well, no, not just because it's cold, but they're freezing the beer so that they can scoop the ice that forms from the water off the top, which will concentrate it more and make it richer and make it actually higher alcohol as well.
Interesting.
So, there you have it, all your lagers. And that brings us to tasting our final lager. What is that?
Which is Trogonator by Trogs.
Trogs out of Hershey, Pennsylvania.
It is a double Bock.
Double Bock, or double Bock in the U.S., I guess. Now, this beer is actually a multi-time GABF medal winner, I believe. This has won a lot of medals at the Great American Beer Festival.
And it's 8.2.
Okay. On the higher side when it comes to lagers.
It is a dark lager with a bready malt aroma, rich, chewy body. It has a subtle spicy flavor is what the bottle says.
Oh, well, let's find out if that's accurate for us.
Let's see.
I haven't had Trogonator in quite a while. It's probably been at least a year since I've had it. And prior to, well, when I had it maybe about a year ago, prior to that, I hadn't had it for several years. So I really haven't had this a whole lot, but I do remember really liking it early on in my beer, craft beer expeditions.
I don't think I've had this at all since I've started liking darker.
Really? This is very red, yeah. Very ruby in color. Also looks very nice. Actually, I think the left-hand Oktoberfest is a little more pretty because this one's a little darker. It's got a little more brown to that red. But you can see through it pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't get much head, just a little bit.
A little bit, but large bubbles.
Mm.
What's it smell like?
Just.
It smells biscuity.
Yeah. It smells like a little syrupy.
It smells significantly syrupy coming off that Oktoberfest.
Yeah. Kind of like I get a little like a molasses.
Yes. I would totally agree with the molasses aspect. I get a little bit of I actually do get a little of that banana chip. that you're talking about getting in the Oktoberfest.
I can see that just a little bit.
Cherries again, like a dark cherry note in the nose. Just like malty, bready, and
really good.
A little bit. If I keep sniffing, a little bit of a brown sugar note to it as well.
But like the dark brown sugar, not the light brown sugar.
Yeah, real dark brown sugar.
Mmm. Tastes exactly like it smells.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it's hitting all those notes that I was smelling, which is probably why this has meddled so many times at the Great American Beer Festival, because like we say on the show, we're usually very impressed if the beer smells and tastes the same.
Which I like. You know, I really, when I get those characteristics in the nose, I want to taste them.
Well, because it's delivering on the expectations that are set from what you're smelling.
I really like this.
The cherry is amped up. There is just that slight bit of that kind of banana chip aspect, but it's not very strong. There's a lot of cherry to this, and there's that dark brown sugar, and there is that molasses aspect to it as well. But then you get that typical lager hay note at the end as well.
Not getting any sort of bitterness at all.
I get a little bit at the end, but I think I'm getting that a little more from the alcohol.
I was going to say, I think,
because you can taste it. You can taste it.
I would say that's the only thing I taste on the end is just a little hint. It's not much, but it's
there. It's there.
Mm. Okay, well.
I want marshmallows with this.
Mm.
I really want marshmallows with this beer. Actually, I'm going to take it a step further. I want s'mores with this beer. Chocolate, marshmallow, and graham cracker with Troganator would probably be magical. Don't you think?
We have chocolate. We might have stale graham crackers.
Hold on. We have something that might get kind of close. We have bark. Which the bark is like chocolate, caramel, and salt, and
pretzels.
Do you want to go grab that? And we can see how it pairs with this. I mean, it's not what I was talking about, trying to have a s'more with it. But I think that rich, decadent, sweet type dessert might go really well with this. And, you know, in the spirit of talking a lot about, trying to now talk a lot about food with beer, I think this would be very appropriate. Do you not? Mm-hmm. Well, Rebecca already took a bite on her way back from the kitchen.
Mm.
All right, come on. Give me one.
Well, I love this stuff.
Yeah, it tastes great. Thank you very much to Ange Manning. She made it, and it's awesome. Mm.
Okay.
Well, first of all, you can taste all the components of the bark.
Mm-hmm.
That's damn tasty. And the salt is like that extra awesomeness. It kicks up the flavor. Mm. Homemade caramel cannot be beat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the flavor of homemade caramel is ridiculous. Actually kind of destroys the beer.
I don't think it destroys the beer. I don't think it enhances anything.
Well, it does. I think it increases the perception of alcohol in the beer.
Really? I was going to say, I thought it decreased it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe I need another sip, but
I'm just going to keep eating the bark.
Oh, actually, no, I think you're right. It greatly decreases the body of the beer.
Yes.
It makes the mouth feel little bit more thin. I think it increases the cherry notes more. You're getting more of like a fruity aspect to it. And a lot of those sweet characteristics have died down quite a bit.
I think this bark increases my waistline.
Maybe. Well, I mean, not just having like a piece or two, but you are going kind of hard on it right now. Is there going to be any left for me? Is my question.
Here, you take the rest.
Why don't you, oh, yeah, never mind. Yes, I will take the rest. That's mine. Okay. I was going to suggest trying it with all the other beers,
it's
but
not
yeah.
Gonna go.
Yeah, I don't think it would go. But also, we don't have enough anymore.
Yeah, we don't. We didn't really have that much left, and I have been thinking about this bark all day at work.
Were you thinking about these beers all day at work?
Not really.
Okay, just the bark.
Just the bark.
Okay. But the important thing is now, what beer are you thinking most about now that you've had them?
Troganator.
Okay. So the Troganator's your favorite. Rank them after that. It's a hard one, isn't it?
You go while I finish chewing.
I like all of them to a certain degree. Would I go back to all of them? Not necessarily, but there are situations where I'd be cool with it. I think I would say that Trigonator's my number one as well. I think after that, I'd have to go the Victory Hellslogger, then the Left Hand Oktoberfest, and then the Brooklyn Pilsner.
Okay.
Not really feeling the Brooklyn Pilsner all that much.
Me neither. Mine's a little bit different. I would go Trogonator, Left Hand Oktoberfest, the Victory Hellslogger, and then Brooklyn.
I thought about going that way too, but then in the end I was more wowed by just the light kisses of flavor that Hellslogger gives, but is still quite flavorful.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But yeah.
So I guess we're going to be fighting over the Trogonator.
Maybe. We probably should have gotten more than one bottle.
That's okay. I don't really need a lot. I'm getting sleepy.
Okay. Well, then sounds like what's going to happen is you'll have maybe a few more tastes. You'll pass out. And then I will drink the rest of all these beers.
Which typically happens after we record.
That is true. It does typically happen. It's up to me to just really slam it. Which, by the way, if you guys go back to the Oregon episode where I had the sours, they had the apricot sour by Cascade, had the Berliner Weiss by Degard, and had the Half Hitch Mosaic Imperial IPA by Crux Fermentation Project. Basically, what happened after that episode was we both finished the Crux. We divvied that up. And then Rebecca had just the smallest bit more of that Berliner Weiss by Degard. And then she went upstairs and was like, I'm done. So I was left with almost a full bottle of the Cascade Apricot and about half of that large bottle of the Berliner Weiss. And let me tell you, I felt obligated to finish it. So I did all of it. And my taste buds were torn up by the end of that. They were torn up because all that sour, and I had so much phlegm worked up in my mouth and throat, it was nasty. The beers were great, but what an ordeal to go through. So
yeah, typically I fall asleep on the couch and then Carlin tries to wake me up and he's like, help me with these beers. And I'm like,
no.
Yeah.
She just refuses. But then I feel like I have to. And this is the thing. This is why I don't go to, like, all-you-can-eat places. Because whenever there's something in front of me, drink, food, whatever, that I've paid for, I feel like I have to get as much as I can out of that money. It's like a challenge, and I have to do it. So I don't go to all-you-can-eat places. So places like Fogo de Chao, probably never going to happen to me because I would get sick. Because I just keep going. So anyway.
But these are all just 12-ounce bottles, so we should be okay.
Well, and they're low, on the low side of the ABV, so, you know. Like, the Hellslogger, 4.8. I mean, come on, you know?
Well, if you need any help with your portion of your bark, I would be glad to help you.
Oh, yeah, you know, I might have a real big problem with that.
I thought you might.
We can continue to discuss that, but we'll see what the what we have after the next decasode. Actually, we may not end up having a style episode after that. So we might, I'm thinking we might just do some more of the food and beer pairing thing. So, yeah. Oh, actually, at this point, we already recorded one. It hasn't come out yet, but it's about to. So we did one, and then after the next episode, I think we'll put out maybe, definitely one more, maybe two more with food and beer pairings. So there you go, bit of a teaser. And we're going to hit a large range of foods, so it should be fun. And a large range of beer. Okay. But at any rate, thank you so much. Rebecca, do you feel educated on lagers now?
I feel very educated.
Are you going to go tell people about lagers, all the lagers?
Nope.
Okay. I like the enthusiasm.
I put out the honesty.
I know, and that's why I married you, is because you're honest about not doing things.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Rebecca, for being here. And everybody, please, please remember to
keep it brutal.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.